project, doing another down home episode of Monster in a Glass, the podcast where we take a cocktail and we explore the history, the who, what, when, where, and why, and then look at other historical factors that surround the drink and the people of the time. So tonight's drink that we're going to do is the Pendennis Club.
The Pendennis Cocktail.
Oh, yeah. It's not the Pendennis Club cocktail. No, it's just the
Pendennis. Yeah, kind of.
It is both. And I don't know anything about this neither. Other than when we did the Mint Julep episode, I read a little bit about the Pendennis Club because it's a club that's in Kentucky, in Louisville, I believe.
Louisville.
The good part.
The Austin of Kentucky.
So
that's right.
I'm joined here by my good friend, the research guy, Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hello.
I'm also here with another great friend of mine, Eric the Maestro Martin.
Well, heavens to Betsy.
And I'm also here with another good friend of mine, Mr. Jeremy the Hackmaster Phelps.
Hi, I have no clever tagline.
You're fighting it. You just fight it every...
He wants to do a Colonel Sanders impression.
You know, I used to. Yeah, I know. I don't want to do...
How do you do a Colonel Sanders impression?
I don't visit
impression?
Slave states.
So, like, you basically just stay in Illinois then? Is that...
Yeah, in the Northeast and, you know, I mean, parts of the West and other countries that, you know, abolished slavery before us.
Yeah.
Almost all.
Anybody have anything to report since our the last time we hung out?
I grew an extra toe.
That's awesome.
I got it cut off though. It lives in an apartment now in Louisville, which is why I'm here tonight.
Okay. Was it the big one or little one?
Well, it was kind of in between. Okay. It was a little misshapen.
So like went to market or roast beef or what are we talking about here?
This one decided it was a cow. That's how it identifies now, so.
I that's not a very nice thing to call a toe.
I'm so close to making it through that.
I assume you have some kind of affliction.
No, I've escaped unscathed this time. No.
I don't believe that for a minute.
Nothing to report. I'll work on something.
I mean, I don't have it now, but, like, I do have this weird thing where I just get old-timey stuff, like, maladies like gout and pleurisy, the good ones.
It's because you're a librarian.
The classics. Yeah.
Well, it's because, I mean, gout, because I live a rich, fat life. It's
yeah.
Because
the pissing evil.
I eat prime rib and drink gallons of mead every night, so.
Mm. That sounds great.
But then your foot starts to hurt like it's broken, so, you know. I mean, you know, you got to balance.
Trade-offs.
Yeah.
I do like prime rib, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of gout. Living high on the hog. Pendennis cocktail. What's it all about? Is this a strictly American one? Did it make its way over to London?
That's a good question. Actually, now that you mention it, it did not.
It's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so the recipe for this drink, as Hegg gives it, is 2 ounces of gin, 1 ounce of apricot brandy...
Gin?
They
don't have gin in Kentucky.
Apparently they do.
No.
I mean, it's probably whiskey gin, but...
It's called moonshine.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they call for gin. Two or three dashes of Peychaud's bitters and 3/4 ounce of fresh lime juice.
Peychaud's.
I know. What are they doing here? They're serving gin in Louisville and Peychaud's in Louisville? What's happening?
Yeah, this is not right. Something's very wrong with this.
This one hardly shows up in any recipe books. The first place I could find it was in Cocktail Bill Boothby's 1908, The World's Drinks and How to Mix Them. And he calls for a different recipe, which is apricot brandy, French vermouth, and gin, which is just basically a martini with apricot brandy. So I was like, oh, okay, so that's not actually, the recipe Hegg's giving is not the original recipe, or at least not the first recipe I was able to find. There's a different book called Beverages Deluxe from 1914, which calls for lime juice, gin, and Hungarian apricotine. And I was like, oh.
What?
Okay.
Wait, it's also a Pendennis cocktail?
This is also a Pendennis cocktail. And I looked up what apricotine is, and it's just apricot brandy, but of the Hungarian variety, apparently. I don't know why specifically you would call for that, honestly.
Because you're in the Pendennis Club.
I guess. Well, I mean, that might be, because this book was published in Louisville.
Is this the kind of place where they eat endangered species?
Lots of polar bears.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Polar bear steak.
Polar bear steak, but you garnish it with a penguin.
And have a Pepsi.
Yeah.
Also, I think we all need to just cycle through every pronunciation of this city.
Yeah.
It's really important. So I will take Louisville.
Okay.
Does anybody want Louisville?
Sure, I'll do Louisville.
There's Louisville. I like that.
They don't even try.
Yeah. And if anybody wants Louisville,
yeah.
then
Eric,
then
do you want Louisville?
Yeah. I'll say Louisville.
Yeah.
Okay.
It grates a bit, but.
Okay. Louise.
Louisville.
Hey, choose whatever you like.
I'm going to go with Louisville. Yeah. In these trying times, I feel it's important.
Wheezy.
And Wheezyville. Jesus. I checked other books, and there was nothing after 1914 until 1930 when Bill Boothby's book was reprinted, and he has that same recipe in it. And then nothing. And then in 1947, Trader Vic has it in his book. And this time, he has the recipe of dry gin, apricot brandy, lime juice, and Peychaud's. So that's clearly where Haig gets the recipe from.
Okay.
And then nowhere else again until the reprint of Trader Vic's book in 1972. So really only three places, let's say, it shows up. I'm going to say it's not a famous cocktail. It's almost non-existent in those books.
It must be really popular at the Pendennis Club then.
I would think so, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say no. It was...
you go and order it, and they're like, "What the?
Like,
what?"
I mean, nobody was really making. We don't know what you're talking about. Bars that much. I mean, maybe they were drinking in the Pendennis Club, but I didn't find anybody talking about it really. But as I was searching for Pendennis, an unusual thing happened. I was coming up with all kinds of other Pendennis drinks, like the Pendennis Toddy, which shows up in Straub's Manual style. Or no, that's not right. I'm a librarian. I deal with style manuals all the time. So when I see manual, I'm like, manual style. APA manual style. MLA manual style. No, Straub's Manual of Mixed Drinks, not style. But maybe there was some
style.
Yeah,
so fun style then. Not fun style, not which fun is style. What you were just talking about.
I properly cite every goddamn thing I write in here. But yeah, the mixed drinks one is much more fun. But there was a Pendennis Toddy, and Straub, he actually worked at the Pendennis Club, which came up in another...
He was at the Blackstone in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then he moved to...
the Louisville.
Yeah. Louisville.
Louisville. Big Wheezy. I think you mean Louisville.
Big Wheezy.
The Big Wheezy.
That's just what we're calling it. The Big Wheezy. So he has a Pendennis Toddy, and I was like, oh, so it was a warm drink. No, it was just, it says, crush a half lump of sugar with a little water in an old-fashioned glass, one jigger of bourbon, one lump of ice. I was like, so toddy? But also just bourbon,
yeah.
Basically?
Why does that get a name?
I know. There's a glass of bourbon. This is your cocktail. I'm not making anything.
Yeah, welcome to Louisville.
And welcome to Big Wheezy. So this shows up again in Jack's Manual from 1933, where I like the way he phrased it here. So he says, crush half a lump of sugar with a little water in an old-fashioned glass, 100% bourbon, one lump of ice. I was like, 100%? Like, we're not, like, just so there's no...
That's a pretty high ABV.
All the bourbon. Put all the bourbon in this glass. That's your toddy. I also found it in a random German recipe book from 1965 called 888 Cocktails, Long Drinks, und andere Mixgetränk für diese Brüderhaus. Did I do that right? I don't know if I did that right, but yeah.
There's no way you did that right.
You have so little faith in my pronunciation of other languages.
Well, yeah, you're intentionally butchering French, so you don't expect your German to be exactly.
What does that say?
I'm guessing it's like...
And mixed drinks
for the
bar and for the bar,
home bar
and home.
There you go. Don't trust me to say anything in any other language. I can barely speak English, so I.
Yeah, we can tell.
I can tell too. Then I also found a Pendennis mint julep, which I found mentioned in a couple of places. And I was like, okay, so what makes it different than a mint julep? Use a silver cup.
They're not even fucking trying.
And I was like, and I read through the recipe and I was like, bourbon, a lot of water, lump of sugar, mint. I was like, so the silver cup. So that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's totally different drink. It's in a silver cup.
The missing ingredient is the feeling of superiority.
That will actually play in a lot in this drink. And then there was the mention of the famous Pendennis eggnog. Again, I'm not sure what's different other than they just say, put bourbon in it. That was about it. Everything else was like, yeah, it looks like eggnog. But I saw that in more places than I saw the toddy, the mint julep.
Is the Pendennis Club still open?
It is.
It is. Did you take a look at their menu at all?
I didn't see any place you could look at their menu.
Huh. Because I wonder if any of these are listed on...
They don't have a menu. They serve whatever you order.
You can just make it up on the fly.
I would like a glass of bourbon, but when you bring it to me, you better call it a toddy.
It better be 100% bourbon.
None of this 70%.
With a platinum swizzle stick.
So yeah, I found the eggnog in a bunch of places. You know, this comes from the Pendennis Club. You know, all of these drinks. You know, even the ones that were showing up more than the cocktail still weren't showing up in that many places. So I was like, okay, Pendennis Club, it's a thing. We've come across this in the old-fashioned episode, too, because they claimed they created the first cocktail, which we'll talk about a little later. So what is the Pendennis Club? It's a private social club, according to a number of random mentions, and according to one source titled A History of Kentucky and Kentuckians, the Leaders and Representative Men in Commerce, Industry, and Modern Activities. I'm not sure what modern activities are. They called it the largest social club in the South, and that's 1912. And according to other sources, it was the first social club in Louisville, or the Big Wheezy. I can find, actually, surprisingly little information on this club. As I was kept searching, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, nothing? Just no... Like, it's mentioned everywhere. And then we had drinks at the Pendennis Club, or we had dinner at the Pendennis Club, or this event was at the Pendennis Club, and I was like, uh-huh. What is it? Like, what do you do there? Like, why is it a thing? Like, who started
this
shit?
It's like Fight Club.
I know. Yeah, like, literally.
Georgetown Prep.
Oh, yeah. It's
easy. Topical.
Dennis Club. Yeah. So I had to resort to Wikipedia, and they say it was started by four men. Thomas Todd, Levi Bloom, John Smith. Surprisingly, there's not very much on any of these people. There was also William Witz Height, who, like, all these four guys, it says that they started the club. It was like, we want a social club, and they started it over a grocer's shop, and then they were like, we need a place. And so they made a place.
It started over a grocery store?
That's what it said in the Wikipedia article. It was very, I didn't understand what they were saying. I also looked for where they got their references, and they list a whole bunch of things, but I couldn't find, I mean, like, some of them were like, it's in this random, you know, Kentucky newspaper. I was like, okay, I can't find it anywhere.
Huh.
So I went to their website to see if there was more information, and I was like, okay, so I know it's a social club. It's a thing where people got together. It sounds like it was, like, only men. And it says on their website, quote, it is an extension of each member's home. Uh-huh. Okay. It is purely a social organization. It is not a businessman's club. It has no business except to serve its members. And I was like, that seems really defensive, like, in the way that it's not a businessman's club. It knows nothing of politics or religion except that its members may or may not be one of one persuasion or another. No one has a right to be a member. Membership is not hereditary, nor is there such thing as a corporate membership to be passed on from one holding a corporate office for the time being to the one who succeeds him. The Pendennis Club is a gathering of friends where decency, decorum, civility, good manners, and social graces are still very much in style. Sounds neat. So how do I become a member? Since it's just
a gathering of friends. Yeah.
And
with decorum.
I'm in.
Let's go. Let's head on down and let's become members.
They don't talk about how you become a member.
Do they have like an email list?
They had a contact form. It just said contact us. It was like, our members enjoy this. I was like, good. Where's membership thing?
Whoa. Contact us. Does this still exist?
Yeah. It's still...
If you have to ask, you'll never be a member.
Well, I'm a straight white male. I demand to be admitted.
Well, see, you'll have to fill up the contact form, and I'm sure somebody will get back to you with questions about why you...
Oh, it's in a slave state, though. So.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And you're a damn Yankee.
Son of a bitch.
The more I looked at the website and did a little research with the bits I could find about it, I doubt I could be a member of this club. And it did seem like it was for a certain class of people.
They have squash and fitness.
They do have squash and fitness. I did notice that. But you needed to make an appointment.
But they are on West Muhammad Ali Boulevard.
I also noticed that, and I was like, I'm pretty sure the street was not always called Muhammad Ali Boulevard. I'm just going to say, that's probably a new development. Because it was it probably had a Confederate general's name. Let's just say that. I'm going to guess that's probably what it was.
Confederate General Muhammad Ali.
He was my favorite Confederate general.
I'll have to find out. I have a friend who is from the aforementioned town. And we'll see if we can find out.
Yeah.
See if what it is and how you get in.
Yeah. It was weird because, like, I'm sure it is if you, like, send a contact and said, like, I would like to become a member, they'd tell you what needs to happen. I'm sure there's dues. There just always is. But I started looking at where I was finding references to it, because there wasn't anything that was like, the Pendennis Club is this thing where this stuff happens and it's really awesome. It was like, these people were members of the Pendennis Club. And every single person that I met, oh yeah. So basically what you're saying is, all the members of this club were big wig white dudes from Louisville. Bankers, VPs of railroad companies, board of trade members, lawyers, judges, senators, and lots of businessmen. Even though they said it's not a businessman's club.
No.
It was really founded by businessmen and also like just had lots of businessmen. And lots of heads of firms of different sorts.
How many colonels?
Lots of colonels.
Lots of...
That came up, like, and I kept going, okay, but were they a real colonel? Or were they, like, the Kentucky colonel? Because, like, I couldn't tell because some of them had military backgrounds. There were a lot of people who had military backgrounds. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I feel like they just were a private and then, like, got out of the army and now they're a colonel. And so it seemed like a lot of it was the Kentucky colonel.
Yeah.
These bios were weird because, like, they're just talking about the who's who of Louisville. And it would be like, here's this person. They were born here and they go to this church and their parents are these people. And they went to this school. They went to Georgetown Prep or whatever. Here's their military backgrounds, and here's the church they belong to now, and this is who they married, and that person is of the whatever family, and how they got on track to be such successes. Every single person is like, so the way you're talking about this club doesn't sound like it's just a bunch of friends getting together. And then I found another vague description from a book called Book of Louisville and Kentucky, edition 1915, with pictures. There was no pictures for this. But it says, the place of patriarch amongst Louisville clubs is occupied by the Pendennis, which for many years has enjoyed a reputation which extends even beyond the bounds of civilization. I don't know what that means. What is out of the bounds of civilization?
Kentucky.
Outer space.
Is this an Eyes Wide Shut situation? Yeah. Like, what?
We are civil folk. It's even known outside of that.
Yeah, but it's mostly like, you know, wearing masks and fucking.
Probably.
I didn't want to be a member before, but now
I Now, let's all fill out the form. We've heard about your parties. We would like to become members, please.
They'll get to Mars and the Pendennis Club will already be there.
That's probably what it is. It says, for many a traveler of note and distinguished visitors from foreign shores have enjoyed the hospitality of this famous old club, its splendid chefs, and its excellent cellars. Straub was a wine steward there, so I'm sure it does have excellent cellars. Its tone is beyond all things the tone of hospitable Kentucky, where the stranger within our gates is a stranger no longer, and where many a tale of the older social glories of Louisville may be heard. To say, this is all one sentence, by the way. I'm pausing, but those are just commas.
You should like read it with a drawl.
Yeah.
Almost like you're wearing a big white hat.
You heard me pronounce German. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure I can't even do a southern accent. To say nothing of its finance and its manufacture. While shop talking is no feature of the life of the Pendennis Club, so again, like, we don't talk shop here. One may meet beyond its hospitable portals the leaders of all thought in Louisville. It is essentially a club of the older set, but counts among its members many of the foremost young men of the community. So the website makes it sound like it's like a haven for all kinds of people to get together, regardless of background, and you have good discussions, civilly, of course.
It's one notch above church.
It does sound neat, but I think it probably was more exclusive than they make it sound. At least it certainly used to seem like that.
Their description says nothing.
Right.
Nothing at all.
Right.
The first part, it's all about how what they aren't.
Yeah.
And then it closes with a sentence that says, "We're just people who like to hang out and have fun."
Yeah, we're people who like to have civil discourse. And it's like, yeah, I didn't even think of it that the whole first part is a negative. Like, we're not this, okay? Don't say we're businessmen. We're not businessmen. We're open.
What the fuck are you? What are you?
Boulevard.
What is this?
Right.
We're just hanging out.
So
drinking from silver cups.
We're drinking juleps out of silver cups, but we're not any better than anybody else. We're not businessmen.
You walk in, it's the basement from that 70s show.
Like, well, I'll be damned. It is like, it's not. They're not businessmen.
They couldn't hold a job if they wanted to. Yeah.
But it did seem like the members were of a certain standing. So, like, there was this book called The City of Louisville and a Glimpse of Kentucky from 1887 that said, there are a number of social clubs in Louisville of great wealth and influence. Principal among these, and possessing their own establishments, are the Pendennis with 300 members. Okay, but you're saying you're not businessmen or, like, posh elite, except that this is great wealth and influence, as mentioned in the first part of that. All right. I mean, it just sounds like a social club for wealthy people in Louisville. Great. I was like, fine. But they had this section. It was their about section. They had, they were talking about the club.
They have an about section where they
tell you nothing.
Yeah. Just more evasion. Yeah. Just like,
would you like to know about us?
Lots of,
no, you won't.
Let me just say lots of fancy words for a while. Yeah. And
so, yeah, they talked about the club crest and motto. And I was like, okay, so let's see what this is. And it says, the club borrowed its crest and motto from John Pendennis, the major and pen, period. And I was like, okay. It says, John in his rise up the social ladder first had a gig with a man to drive him, but later on his, quote, poor old mother had the happiness of seeing him from her bedroom window, to which her chair was rolled, and her beloved John step into a closed carriage of his own, a one-horse carriage. It is true, but with the arms of the family of Pendennis handsomely emblazoned on the panels. I was like, what the fuck am I reading? And then, so this is the motto is Latin, so I get to butcher another language here. We get nec tenui penna.
Good thing Latin's dead.
Yeah, it needs to stay dead. I just killed it anyway. Major Arthur Pendennis, we are told, wore an elegant ring also emblazoned with the famous arms of Pendennis. And when John died and was buried in the Abbey Church of Clavering St. Mary's, fair marble slab was erected over his pew. On it you may see the Pendennis coat of arms and crest, an eagle looking toward the sun with the motto, Nec tenui penna, to the present day. The motto literally means, nor on weak wing, and has given rise to the oral tradition that it means that the members of the club are high flyers. A more scholarly tradition identifies it as a fragment from an ode by a Latin poet Horace, the first two lines of which translate, on neither weak nor vulgar wing shall I be borne through liquid air. Okay, so it was named after these people named Pendennis, this guy, maybe John Pendennis. I was like, I got a name. I can start looking up this guy. And I started looking for him, and I was like, well, they're quoting something too, so then maybe it's like a biography of this person. And
this is all just fabricated.
Well, yeah, it turns out that John Major and Arthur Pendennis, a.k.a. Penn, were fictional characters.
What?
From a book called The History of Pendennis, His Fortunes and Misfortunes by William Thackeray. And this explains why I kept getting Thackeray, like, results. I was like, I put in Pendennis, it'd be like, Arthur Pendennis, Thackeray. And I was like, I don't want to read about Thackeray. I want to read about Pendennis. Like, I thought, well, this, you know, maybe it's just a name.
So were they just adopting this fictional character and like play acting some roles, this like style of living based on this.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. So I looked at the summary of this book, a bunch of summaries actually. So the story kind of like, this is very, very brief, but it was like John Pendennis was basically some sort of doctor, this is the plot, in a small town, and he wanted to be a gentleman, but he could never quite get there. His brother, whose name was Major, was some sort of prick who just wanted money and stuff. And Arthur, who was John's son, was nicknamed Penn. He decides after his father, John, dies that he's going to be someone. He's going to move out of this small town and he's going to be a gentleman. And so Major, who is the prick, takes Arthur under his wing and also makes him a prick. And then the story is very confusing. When you read the summary, you're like, who is this now? Like, who are they talking about? Because it was like, and then Blanche married this person, but then she was engaged to this other person. And then Arthur got engaged to Laura, who was then engaged to this person.
This is like a Kentucky Bible.
I know. I was like, I don't, what, who's it? Yeah. So basically there was a lot.
You find out all these people are related.
They were. Actually, they mentioned it was like his first cousin.
And there it is.
So it was there. Basically, there was a lot of engagements, called off marriages and hijinks and stuff. So like the basic, it's basically like he's being pulled between this good world of like being a good person and this bad world of like being materialistic. There was a piece of a synopsis that I found that said, Arthur's good angels are his widowed mother, Helen, Laura Bell, whom he eventually marries and whom his mother has adopted, and George Warrington, a friend with whom he shares rooms. This is my friend. I share rooms with him.
That's somewhat suspicious.
The good influences are, however, less imaginatively presented than the bad ones. And the distinctiveness of the novel depends on his amusing portrayal of vulgarity, intrigue, and materialism of London society and the journalistic and literary world of Fleet Street. So at one point in the book, Arthur, it goes into journalism.
Wait, this is London?
It's set in London. Thackeray was British. So they took this book, they named the club after either Arthur. It seems like they named him after Arthur. So what is the point? So what are they trying to say? Like, I couldn't find anything that said, like, well, why did they call it the Pendennis Club? Why did they choose this out of anything, anywhere? It sounds like the book is a comment, like, based on all these summaries I read, and, like, the criticism was, like, it's a comment against materialism and, like, wealth and, you know, frivolous wealth, basically. But all of the people that were part of these clubs were wealthy. Like, what are they trying to say? It almost seemed like, to me, I was like, are they, like, do they think that they're like, no, we're good people. Like, we're not materialistic. And I'm
that's not what this is about.
So they're Democrats then.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're not frivolously wealthy, but they spent money imprinting this fictional character onto the walls?
Yes. They have their motto, it's motto and crest, like, they don't even know what the crest actually looked like. There was just descriptions of it, so they created their own based on the description. But you could have just named it after one of the four dudes. Like, if it was these four dudes, which I couldn't even verify anyway.
This whole thing seems more likely with, like, a Harry Potter group or something, you know?
That's what I was just thinking. Like, I could see a Slytherin club.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Just really wealthy people who want to be dicks to others.
Yeah. It is. Now we're talking about Republicans.
Yeah. We're fair and balanced here. I mean, like,
real topical.
Yeah, but it did remind me, like, as I was reading this, it sounded like the social clubs that we were talking about with the Fish House Punch episode. So, like, the Skulkel Fishing Club and the Junto Club that Ben Franklin founded. So, like, it always, the way they always describe it, it's like, we're chill. We're, like, working guys, right? And we get together and we talk about religion and politics and economics and philosophy. And we drink a little bit, but not, like, a lot. And we're just dudes and we chill. But when you look at who the members are, you're like, these are all, like, the wealthiest people of this area. Like, there's no, like, you're not just, like, inviting. You're like, oh, look, go get the blacksmith and bring it. Let's see what he has to say about God. It's like, no, it was all of the most wealthy people that I was like, I don't get it. Like, why even put on the air? It's like, have a social club. You're like, this social club's elite. You have to have a certain amount of money. fine, whatever. Like,
how far back does it go?
1881. It wasn't clear, but it sounded like it's
so not too
it,
old.
It started in 1881, and then like it, like its official headquarters, like a standalone place, opened up in like 1883 or something.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not that old. You know, the way they present it is like, it's open to all, and we're not exclusive, but there were definitely no women in it, no people of color, like, for sure. And there probably was nobody who was even remotely poor, or even from the working class. Like, there's no way that these, they were like, yes, come on in. Yes, of course, you're all welcome. Just come in. You can be a member. I was like, I don't know. Based on the number of people that they were like, this person's a member of the Pendennis Club, and they're the head of the Louisville Railroad Company, and you're like, yeah, that guy is not fraternizing with like the drunk down the street. And they're like, yeah, no, it's fine. We're cool. Everybody can come in. And every reference to it, they use the term exclusive or distinguished. And I was like, I don't know who you're trying to fool here, but this is not. Now, to be fair, we don't know what it's like now. Maybe it is a little bit different. It's a different time. I'm guessing that, based on the website, it is probably still exclusive. They only talk about members, like, in a way that is like, our members enjoy this very fancy banquet hall, and our members enjoy this very fancy restaurant, and you can rent out this this beautiful room. And I'm like, yeah, how much does that cost? Like, for, like, oh, you could have a wedding here. It's like, huh? That's a,
but the bride can't come.
Yeah. <when he's> like- I mean, dudes are chill, but, like, no women, right? I mean, like, it was a very weird description, the way they talked about it. Like you said, it was, like, they talked about all the things they weren't, which automatically means, like, you're trying to be secretive here? Why not just say it doesn't exist? No, there's no Pendennis Club. What's this building? It's not the Pendennis Club.
It's an indoor mini golf course. Yeah.
But you have to be a member. How do you become a member? Not hereditary? What's that over there?
Your shoes are untied.
The only other thing that I would say about this is that we talked about the Pendennis Club with the old-fashioned episode, because there was a claim that they had created the first cocktail and the first old-fashioned, which we, through that episode, if you haven't listened to it, it's fun. There's a lot of gross stuff in it, but we do talk about, like, the oldest cocktail ever invented. And but they say that it was, this is from the old Waldorf Astoria bar book, which is at fault for starting the story. This was brought to the old Waldorf in the days of the sit-down bar, and was introduced by, or in honor of, Colonel James E. Pepper, a Kentucky proprietor of celebrated whiskey of the period. It was said to have been the invention of a bartender at the famous Pendennis Club in Louisville, of which Colonel Pepper was a member. And this is the old-fashioned whiskey. Now, in that episode, we talked that that's just not true. It was not created in Louisville. But we also talked about that it's possible that they were the first ones to put bourbon in the old-fashioned. And since Louisville made bourbon old-fashioned its official drink, it's probably, they're real serious about it. So,
since the mayor was a member of the club.
Yeah, right. What club? There's no club. There's no Pendennis Club. So, yeah, that's about it. I mean, there's not much to go on with this one. It is a whole big lack of information. And at first I was just like, why is nobody talking about this? But I think you hit on it. It's like, it's a secret club. It's, nobody knows who's in it, and it wants to keep people out. That would be my guess.
And the people that go there probably don't go to many other bars asking for cocktails.
A Pendennis Club, yeah. Like, can you... That was a surprise. I mean, it showed up in a few places, and I was like, how did this get out? Like, who's talking about these? I mean, maybe a few people were like, oh, well, I'm traveling. Can you make me this drink? And they were like, what is this now? A what cocktail? It's got apricot brandy? That's a martini. We want a martini? No, put apricot brandy in it. I don't want to do that.
Like, huh. And it doesn't seem like it's really affiliated with... I mean, you didn't find the drink itself tied to the place.
I couldn't find it anywhere. I mean, aside from those recipe books, I found it in no newspapers. Nobody was talking about it. So maybe it was like Fight Club. Like, nobody talks about the Pendennis cocktail.
Huh. Okay.
But also, there was like three different recipes, and it was only in three books. So, like, that was also like Trader Vic by 47 was probably like, I don't know.
And it's strange, I mean,
he just ripped off everything anyway. So
but it's strange that he had it in his book.
Yeah, it's not much of a tiki drink.
I know. Kentucky tiki.
Kentucky.
It's a Kentucky drink.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's got gin and brandy and I guess lime juice? Sort of tropical? Peychaud's is not. It's a random thing to appear there.
Yeah.
But that I think that's how it survived and how Ed got a hold of it. That was the only recipe that matched his.
Yeah.
Everything else was like, it's a martini. Just add other things.
Okay. Hmm. Okay.
Hungarian apricotine.
Yeah.
I don't know why Hungarian.
That seems very specialty. I guess. And so that's the silver cup.
Fucking people. Like, it's a whole new drink because we put it in a different cup. You can't prove it.
Let me tell you what we're not.
Yeah. If you're drinking out of fucking silver cups anyway, come on. We're not exclusive.
You just have to be able to buy the cup.
Do you have a silver cup? That's how you become a member.
If you can buy the cup, you can join.
That would be awesome if that was the membership. Yeah, and you just have to buy a silver cup. But this silver cup.
It's
$10,000
for the silver cup.
And you can only drink Pendennis cocktails out of it.
Jeez. It's like a really upscale 7-Eleven. Big gulp. 100% bourbon.
You put put in the contact form, be like, I don't have a silver cup. I do have a limited edition Big Gulp cup from the Marvel movie. Will that work?
You can't get these anymore.
I've already had bourbon in it.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap this one up and take this recipe over to Ward 8. Actually drinking it.
Ask him to make a Pendennis eggnog.
No.
Be like, could you please make eggnog?
I wonder if having it will inform us a little bit about it.
Be okay. Like, can you please give me Hungarian apricotine in this one?
They might have it.
They have it in the back.
It is okay. True, they might have it behind the bar. They're like, oh, I mean, we only have one brand of it. We only carry Tito's Hungarian apricotine.
Okay, let's go to the bar.
The Pendennis Cocktail. 2 ounces City of London Gin, 1 ounce Apricot Brandy, 3 dashes Peychaud's Bitters, 3/4 ounce Lime Juice.
And so here we are at Ward 8. We're going to have an exclusive men's club drink. And attending the tasting team, we are tonight an exclusive men's club.
It's true. Not
just like the Pendennis Club. As Rachel has told us this evening when she bowed out, she said, oh, just like the Pendennis Club.
I think it should be noted that unlike the Pendennis Club, we did not disallow any women from joining. It just happened to work out this way.
I don't think that we would be allowed within 100 yards of the Pendennis Club.
No.
So, but anyway, the Pendennis Club, it's in Louisville, Kentucky. So I'm here with Mr. Eric Martin.
Hello.
Have you ever been to Kentucky?
I drove through it once.
Oh, so you saw the kudzu.
I did not know what it was at the time, but I read articles about it, and yeah. I now know that it has killed most of the state's population. So I guess I have seen it.
So that's what you see when you drive through? I mean, and it's a beautiful state. I mean, we drove through it. We camped in it. It was a nice place, but, you know.
Were you also killed by kudzu?
Very nearly. So
it was fast.
Yeah. We're also here with Mr. Jays Ranville.
Hello.
Jays, how about your relationship with Kentucky?
A long and complicated one, going back many years, whereby we broke each other's hearts
reconnected, and then fell out again. But I think there's still always going to be a part of us that thinks back fondly on each
other. So you've never been there?
I have actually been there. I have been to Kentucky a couple of times.
Oh, what do you think? What did you do?
Like a lot of people who have lived in both the Midwest and the East Coast, I spent a lot of time driving through Kentucky.
Of course, yeah.
For various reasons.
Kudzu.
I think I've probably... Kudzu, usually because Kudzu was chasing me.
Yeah.
And I had no choice but to flee for my life. I have been to Louisville, and it is a very charming mid-sized U.S. city.
So you drove through, so you didn't have time for bourbon?
I did have bourbon.
You did?
I did have bourbon. I have had bourbon in Kentucky.
Is it better in Kentucky?
It's Kentuckier.
I don't think... when I was in Kentucky, I don't think we had bourbon.
I feel like if you're in Kentucky, you can just drink bourbon on the road, right? You don't actually have to stop.
Except for the one dry county.
Yeah, we were trapped in that county.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it because you went to try and actually tour the distillery?
We were in the Smoky Mountains. It was early evening, so the shadows were long. We were driving to our campsite.
The kudzu was hungry.
Exactly. We were driving to our campsite. Cliff on one side, precipice into a ravine with a raging river on the other side. Mm-hmm. We turned a corner, and then right in the middle of the road was a rock. And I straddled it with the tires, and the rock went under, and I heard it go clang, and then we smelled a whole lot of gasoline, and then we quickly swerved the car to the edge and stopped it and realized that the gas tank was smashed.
Wow.
And then there was tornadoes coming through, a horrible thunderstorm and tornadoes coming into the area, and we were rescued by the Rangers and taken back to our campsite, where we then spent a terrifying evening in a massive thunderstorm with high winds in a tent.
Is it possible that Kentucky just hates you? Did you do something to Kentucky?
No. I think it was just, we were just there at an inopportune time.
Wasn't the Bell Witch from Kentucky? Like, is it possible you offended her ghost somehow?
The thing that says that maybe there's something going on is that we were like on a ridge, like in between two. There, on one side was one area, on the other side was another, and we needed to get our car fixed, so we took it to the dry side. And we got a hotel, and we stayed there for a week waiting for our car to be fixed, and we weren't drinking anything because they weren't allowed to. And I was like, this is fucking Kentucky. What do you... on the other side, it was like a party, you know?
But for the wrong side of the mountain.
That's right.
I feel like that also does sound like a book, like a collection of short stories about Kentucky folk, but for the wrong side of the mountain.
I feel like you must have insulted the colonel at some point in your life.
Which colonel?
Colonel Sanders.
Because everybody's a colonel in Kentucky.
But
not
there's,
everybody.
There's one who's known outside of Kentucky more than any other.
Pendennis Clubs.
Awesome.
Pendennis Clubs.
And they are different. The two are different.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. Well, in the book it said something about peach liqueur or apricot liqueur.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we did this one with peach and then this one with apricot.
Oh.
So,
okay.
Kick ass.
Yeah.
Awesome.
City of London, London Dry Gin. Both of the liqueurs are Rockman Winter, peach or apricot.
And then pay shots,
yeah.
And then some lime.
And then lime. Yeah, so pretty simple, actually.
Mm. Awesome.
There they are.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Sure. You're welcome.
Again. I'll have to be on first blush, which is not meant to be a pun, given the color of the drink, pinker than I would have anticipated for a drink coming out of Kentucky. I don't think of Kentucky as a very pink state.
Also, think of the ingredients.
Oh, no. It logically makes sense.
It's no. What are the ingredients?
Apricot or peach, right?
No. Well, there's you've got your apricot, your apricot element.
Gin.
Mm-hmm. And you've got gin.
Mm-hmm. Also,
and
a bold choice for
Peychauds.
Fair.
So, where is this cocktail from? there's not a lick of bourbon in this.
It's true. Well, you know,
and it's got a primarily New Orleans additive, gin. What? Who drinks gin in the Smoky Mountains?
There's got to be a point when you're just...
They call that moonshine.
There's got to be a point when you're just a little tired of the bourbon. I mean, there's lots of things that I like, but even some of the things that I like best, you just need to take a step away from it after a while.
Gin is what you drink when you run out of bourbon.
That's true. That's true. And
what's this dusty bottle
and
down here?
When your car runs over the rock that ruptures your gas tank, and you have to, there's a stormy night, you can't leave the mountain, and all you've got is the gin.
The gin, or you make your own in the bathtub.
Moonshine. That's what it's called.
You could add some pine branches to make it gin.
There's got to be juniper somewhere in Kentucky, right?
Probably many people named juniper in Kentucky.
June.
Flavored with kudzu.
Flavored with kudzu.
What does
somewhere kudzu somewhere there's a oh god it seems like it would it seems like it would taste really sharp. Somewhere in Kentucky there is definitely a woman named June who has worn kudzu. I am convinced of that.
She's the modern iteration of the Baba Yaga.
The Baba Yaga.
Why doesn't Colonel Sanders live in the Baba Yaga's hut?
It does make
it has chicken legs.
It does. Maybe that's why. I mean, the whole point of Baba Yaga's hut that it could get up and walk away.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that hut took one look at the colonel and was like, "Yeah, not for me, man." we're out of here, boy chick.
Is it the original food truck, Colonel Sanders in the Baba Yaga's hut, going from city to city selling chicken and curses?
I hope at least one night out of the week they swap roles.
That's a book I want to read.
Because I absolutely want to see what happens the night the Baba Yaga decides that it's her turn to make the chicken. And she pulls out whatever ancient Russian folk recipe she happens to have. And the curses fall to the colonel. Which I imagine would be things like, may your spices only be 10 count.
I knew I had the 11th one somewhere. Where did it go?
This is a true story, by the way. If you follow the colonel on Twitter, lots of people follow the colonel's Twitter account. The colonel only follows all 5 Spice Girls and 6 guys whose first name is Herb. I guess he follows 11 urban spices. I think that is rather clever.
Great marketing.
That is very clever.
So, what are we going to do with this?
Apricot, peach. Cam just had a reaction. An extended one.
I inhaled it instead of drank it.
It smells like Hawaiian punch.
The apricot also has kind of a Hawaiian punchy aftertaste.
The
like, you know,
as well.
You know when you would drink Hawaiian punch and you'd get that like shock of sugar, and then the sugar would all, I don't know, something would happen and but like the aftertaste was sort of like that metallic aftertaste. It's kind of similar with this.
Yeah. It's like if a Hawaiian punch had electricity running through it.
Now I'm trying to place this as a drink for the high rollers of Kentucky.
I can definitely taste the gin. Did gin have a certain social cachet that maybe bourbon wasn't affording?
I don't know. I have no idea. I wouldn't think so, but
only the northerners can get that gin.
That would seem like a negative then.
Because it's
unless right? The Pendennis was club was.
Was it made by carpetbaggers? Do we know?
No. Pendennis Club. It was a. They go to great lengths to not say that they're a bunch of rich guys. Mm-hmm.
We want to be around people just like us.
Yeah, that's
salt of the earth.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have great conversations and we're very cordial and civil.
But awfully easy to do that with a bunch of people that you solely agree with.
Yeah, and people who don't have any cares in the world.
Right.
There is a difference between the peach and the apricot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the difference in taste between a real peach and a real apricot, but there is a difference. I think the apricot flavor is just a little bit sweeter, maybe? I don't know if that's the right adjective.
Mm.
A little bit smoother.
I feel like it hides the gin a little bit more.
I feel like the peach is sweeter, but you're right. The gin is also more noticeable in the peach version than in the apricot version. Like the peach version, really, I really taste the gin. I don't so much in the apricot.
The peach one smells nicer to me.
It does.
I think the apricot one has more of a aged fruit smell to it. Just a hint of raisin.
Well, an apricot's kind of a pungent smell, like just on its own. Dried apricot.
I feel like dried apricots are more prevalent than
dried peaches, certainly.
Canned peaches are definitely the preferred mode of.
For peaches?
Transportation of non-fresh peaches.
Yeah.
I hate fresh peaches. They're never ripe. I'm saying that. I've never eaten a peach in Georgia, so maybe it's different there. Paula Deen, please write us. Let us know.
I was going to say, one of you guys needs to show me on the fruit basket where the peach hurt you. Like,
peach emoji is more useful to me than the actual peach emoji. Peaches.
Well, now that you mention, I think I have probably used the peach emoji far more frequently than I've used the actual peach. Although, I don't know, peaches are kind of having a moment right now, thanks to Call Me By Your Name. So, who are we to deny their time in the spotlight?
And there's no Super Smash Brothers character named Apricot, so...
This is all making me kind of root more for the Apricot version. I feel like the Apricot version is the underdog.
I guess my impression on this one is, it's drinkable. It's not my favorite. It's interesting.
When you guys drink this, does it feel like everything's clashing? Because that's kind of what I feel like. I feel like it's nothing's really in harmony with itself, and it feels like everything's fighting itself.
I feel like it's a low-grade alcoholic beverage from a bottle.
Like something that you would buy in the supermarket on the lower-level shelf that peach, was like the pre-mixed.
Yeah, Peach yeah. Mad Dog. Peach or, Mad Dog. You know. Mm.
You know what? It would be called something like Peach Belfini. Instead of Bellini or something, like it would have some not quite clever enough twist to the name to make you think you were surely getting something different.
The fruit flavor is just weak enough to feel like flavored water with alcohol in it.
Okay.
It, like not the LaCroix, but what came before, like those carbonated sucralose sweetened.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Flavored waters from Walmart.
Like vitamin water. Trademark.
Vitamin water. Trademark. Before that, even, my grandmother used to buy these for us when we were kids all the time because my mom would have killed her if she bought a soda. But just this fake fruit flavor almost. Mm. These do not taste like fake fruit, but there's just that hint of something that reminds me of that. It's odd to have a childhood flashback from a beverage with alcohol in it.
But... Speak for your own childhood.
Okay.
They're not bad. I like them more as I drink them.
Do you really?
Because the gin flavor disappears after you drink more of the gin. And I do have that nostalgic attachment to very weak fruit flavors.
Nostalgic attachment to weak fruit flavors.
Yeah. We didn't have real fruit growing up. It was all canned.
I'm going to come down on this. Feels like it's a drink that clashes with itself. Like, I feel like whoever was coming up with this in this exclusive men's club really desperately wanted to have a high-class drink, but they didn't really quite know how to do it.
Okay, I can see that.
You know?
Like, maybe they were... Yeah, maybe. Okay. Because I have no idea why gin is the main ingredient. That's either. Bugging me. That's bugging me to no end.
And I don't know that...
And you're pulling Peychauds from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Up to here. It's like... What? Who are you trying to be with this drink?
The presentation is nice. It's a nice color.
Remember,
the flavor is unique.
Remember, Eric, how this club was named?
After a fictional character.
Yeah, after a fictional character in a book. The crest, the motto, all of it. And I think we drew a connection to, like, say if you made a exclusive men's club off of one of the houses in Harry Potter.
Not a bad idea.
I was going to say, it sort of reminds me of like those clubs that will pop up from time to time or social organizations or whatever that will pop up from time to time. And they will try very, very hard to convince you that they have this long established, like we have venerated, we've been here forever, we're a part of the fabric of this community. And then you find out like, well, it was founded 2 years ago. Like they've put on the airs and put on the decoration of a very established old world thing, but they just haven't had it. It strikes me a little bit like maybe that's what was going on here. Like they might have known that they needed to have a drink, they needed to have a signature, and this is what they came up with.
No,
and,
see, this doesn't appear in their menus.
Oh, it doesn't. It's just named for it. Okay.
We don't know. It doesn't seem to be affiliated with the Pendennis Club, like in their menus or other things that Jay could find. It's a puzzle wrapped in an enigma.
And it tastes like it.
It does.
The flavors do not blend super well.
That's what I mean. They kind of clash.
I have never had anything like this before, which I enjoy. I probably wouldn't order one again, but I enjoy this because it's new.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's good for novelty. I don't hate it. Like, I'm not repulsed by it. I don't find that it's done the job.
Yeah, I think you could get something similar with a peach wine cooler.
Yeah, I think that's maybe part of my problem is that maybe it's because of the peach. Maybe even though, like I said, I like peaches, but maybe there's something about that peach flavor that does make me think of like the wine cooler that you know you you smuggled in high school or something that wasn't really all that high quality.
And I guess maybe the peach does have more of a little more of a candy flavor association. So that just makes you want to say it's juice.
It could be that when this was created, peach rings weren't widely distributed.
They were actually peaches cut in a ring shape.
I definitely associate that flavor, the one peach note the alcohol extracts from the fruit, with the peach rings and other peach flavored candy.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's one. It could be many, but it's a very distinct profile. Because you're missing the acidic notes from the peach in this.
I think that's... You're right. I think that's what's going on. It doesn't... All the bite, all the acid comes from the gin.
No, it comes from the lime.
You think?
There's lime in there, too.
But,
yeah.
I mean, I know that there is, but, like, it just...
It's not the same thing.
I feel... When I drink it, I get... It burns my throat. That's why
I
coughed initially.
Is that a reaction you have to lime?
Yeah, I think that it's okay. the lime. You know, it's like, you know, just... It's just burning. That's what the lime imparts. It imparts the burning.
We added the lime for fire.
Cam finds out he's allergic to citrus.
Exactly. 2 weeks from now. Exactly. Cam's eyes are swelling shut right now as we're talking.
The acid from the lime is a lot different than the acid from the peach.
Yeah, but I don't think that there's acid in the liqueur, in the peach liqueur.
No, I think that's what we're saying is it needs more of that. It needs to have that.
The flavor profile of the peach and the apricot is flattened into a very one-note flavor, which is fine, but it gives me an association that this cannot possibly meet because it's a drink and not a chewy candy.
Yeah, okay. So what are the food pairings?
If you really loved this and you wanted to drink it with a meal, I think that... You would want to pair it with something that was probably on the sweeter side.
So it's more of a dessert thing.
I think it would be because you don't want anything too acidic. It wouldn't go well with all desserts, but maybe like an almond cake.
Oh, I was going to say this would actually go... This may mix things wrong, but I would say this would go good with like an almond salad.
Almond salad would be good too. You don't want... But not with a really acidic or bitter dressing.
No. But you'd want that bitterness from the greens.
From the greens, yeah.
It would go good with that.
Something that uses natural pairings that you usually see with peach or apricot, like almond or similar tree nuts, I think would work pretty well with this. I wouldn't venture into anything that's too acidic or too sweet. Something too savory would just taste off after drinking this, so there's a very limited menu that you'd want
it's
to pair
It's a narrow
with
band.
Yeah.
Waldorf salad. I think that's what you pair. You pair this with a Waldorf salad. That's really what you do. You have a Waldorf salad and the pandanus, and that's your lunch. You can have two if you want.
There's a lot going on in this, so something that's a little bland would probably be the best bet. Because it'll fight anything you're eating with it.
Okay. Who are you voting for mayor?
Oh, God. I don't know.
She's not running.
I wouldn't vote for her.
She's not running.
I wouldn't vote for her either. Cancer's a thing.
Not for long.
Oh, ouch.
The guy is figuring it out in Israel.
There's a guy in Israel who's figuring out cancer? Is the guy you're talking about Jesus?
No, his name is Elon.
And not Elon Musk?
My wife was reading the article about it. His name is spelled I-L-A-N, and she said Elon. And she's like, oh, it's cure for cancer. And she read it. And I said, so the takeaway from this article is... You're going to do great things if your name is Elon.
Yeah. You know? Name your kid Elon, ladies and gentlemen. I had not heard that there is an Israeli scientist, I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
Do we know he's a scientist? Can we confirm that?
It was on...
I'm just saying, we're in a world right now where lots of people are making lots of claims, and I'm not just willing to buy into any of these anymore.
I myself do not trust scientists. That's why I'm anti-vax.
Oh.
I'm not vaccinated any of my children.
Well, that's just wise.
Three have measles, and so I go to the public pool and dip them in, just
Excellent.
To expose everyone.
Excellent.
Yes.
If it was good enough for the mortality rate of our great grandparents, I don't understand why it can't be good enough for the mortality rate of us now.
That's really my goal. I'm lowering carbon emissions.
Isn't it kind of like forest burns?
We just burn out that we burn out a certain number of kids to start with. Therefore, the sick ones can't overtake them. There's going to be new legislation against vaccinations. It's called the Healthy Children Initiative.
That's exactly what it would be called.
Getting rid of the weak ones.
Well,
so that there's only the
and
strong.
What color do you think with the, that might those weak ones might end up being under this legislation?
Polka dot.
In certain conditions, yes.
Data plans are a thing. Why can't Star Trek be real?
I feel ya. Have you watched Discovery?
No, but we just got a month free of the CBS thing, so we're gonna binge it.
I really, really like the first season, and I need someone who's got this access to the second season so I can watch it.
We've been watching The Orville, which I feel like is spiritually there.
Oh, it is. I actually feel like that's one of my problems with The Orville.
Is that it's too close?
It's too close. Like, they were trying to be like, let's mock Star Trek, and then I was like, no, you just made Star Trek.
I don't think mocking it was the goal. I think that Seth MacFarlane was like, I need to make Star Trek but not get sued.
Sure, I'd buy that interpretation too.
Star Trek needs to cover porn addiction. I have a little bit of a middle school crush on Seth MacFarlane.
I can understand that.
It's not adult crush, it's no, definitely it's like, middle school.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can understand that. He's sort of like middle school attractive.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I don't understand why I like you, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go to the fall dance?
Exactly. Do you want to go roller skating?
We know that we're just going to make out and nothing else is going to happen, but I'm okay with that.
Have you watched Big Mouth? Have you seen any of Big Mouth?
I watched a couple episodes, but I have a problem when characters lie to each other on TV. And
oh, wow.
That show's full of it,
oh,
as
it's totally
are many,
full of it.
Many other shows. But that's why I stick to documentaries mainly.
I do recommend Powering Through Lying, because I will say that at least all lies are exposed. Like everyone sort of has to come to a place of truth with each other.
It is.
And it is the most accurate representation of middle school I've ever seen put on. Of middle school and puberty that I've ever seen put on the TV.
My biggest problem with lies on TV is not the lying. It is the suspension of knowing they're going to be found out. Mm. And a lot of drama is going to happen that could have been avoided. Which is why I hate Friends. It is the worst show on television. They all lie to each other. And
the first version was Three's Company.
It was Three's Company.
I have not seen that.
Where it's,
it was Three's Company.
Where every time it was someone overheard someone else talking, uh-huh, and thought that someone was having sex with someone else.
Just
or someone else was gay.
And they did like 7 seasons of that joke. Every episode, 7 seasons of that joke. And then Mr. Roper came in and had a freak out.
Yeah.
That was that story.
And the whole premise was that Jack Tripper could live with 2 women because he was gay.
Because that was the, yeah. The premise of it is 2 women and a man living in the same apartment, and he was allowed to live there because there was some, like, it wasn't proper, like, it would have been thought badly.
Yeah.
Which shows you so much about the times. But the only reason why he was allowed to live there was because they perpetuated the myth that he was gay, even though he was, like, this total ladies' man, which...
Hanging out at the Regal Beagle.
The Regal Beagle. Which is, like, it's, like... half progressive for what it is and half utterly regressive for what it was. Like,
I can't wait till people think of now as that.
Yeah, isn't that cool? So I think we're going to do something a little bit different now. Something we're going to shift focus and do something that we've been doing on Twitter. If you go to hashtag show us your cocktail, do that search, you will find many postings of people making cocktails, showing them off to Black Lover Project. So, something we're doing is having one of the bartenders at Ward 8, Anders, is selecting one of the Show Us Your Cocktails and is going to share that drink with us here this evening. What is this one called, Anders?
This is the Permanent Holiday.
The Permanent Holiday.
Permanent Holiday, yes.
It looks festive.
This was brought to us by Mr. Doug Winship, who's a personality on Booze Twitter, and he did the hashtag Show Us Your Cocktail. This is the one that Anders picked for this episode. Why did you choose this one?
It started with just reading through the ingredients and then trying them all together, and I think it's a fantastic tiki drink in that it's huge flavors. You get bourbon, Amaro, vanilla, grapefruit, passion fruit, and they all kind of hit you in the face, but balanced out. And I think you get the sweetness up front, you get the bitterness on the end. It's just really a well-rounded cocktail. I also got a kick out of the garnish. He has this spent lime shell that's tattooed, so to speak, so it's marked up. It just looks like a messed up nipple, if you ask me, but I got a kick out of it, so I went with it. I took the liberties and added a big sprig of mint, which the recipe said it would not go amiss,
okay,
to use his words. But I think it's a really nice cocktail. I think it was a great submission.
Excellent one for Tiki Month. Happy Tiki Month. That's a good drink.
Okay, so this was the
Permanent Holiday.
This was the Permanent Holiday.
The name is slightly morbid, and I love that about it.
This is Tiki Month, so this was a Tiki entry. Bourbon-based.
I'm a fan of this drink.
It's good, isn't it?
I'm just getting the citrus peel when I smell it.
It is citrusy. I feel like this has got a level of complexity that I wasn't expecting, but it all layers and works.
Oh, I would get very drunk on that.
Wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Hence the permanent vacation.
I love the bitterness at the end.
I do, too.
Because I'm bitter.
No, that is delicious.
It's true, he is.
Sweet up front, bitter at the end. There's acidity in there, but it is not sharp.
Is this beachable?
Oh, this is completely beach. I assume it might be difficult to assemble at the beach, but it is beach drinkable 100%.
Is it something you would have in the Caribbean, or would you have it on a Texas beach?
So you're thinking like North Caribbean, Bay of Gulf of Mexico kind of thing.
This feels more like a Texas thing. Mostly probably. Because you said there was bourbon in there.
Yeah, it's bourbon based.
There's a hint of smokiness in there.
Yeah.
That I think lends itself more to the Texas than Caribbean side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think there's not enough, and this is not a knock on it, but there's not enough fruit for it to be straight up Caribbean. Like, Caribbean has a lot of like sweet fruit types of flavors in it.
Yeah.
This doesn't have that.
And then that's why this is so different and refreshing. Yeah, it's a refreshing take on the tiki.
Exactly. Maybe Texas. I also
Atlanta?
Could actually see this. What's that?
Or Georgia?
Georgia. I was going to say, I actually could see this being much more of like a Carolinas.
Yeah,
or even
go.
Further north drink for like the northerners who are like, we've got our 3 months of summer and we've discovered what we think is a tropical drink. I would absolutely order that. On a beach or not on a beach. Preferably on a beach.
So this is a drink that was shown to us by Mr. Doug Winship at DA Winship on Twitter. Check him out.
Well done, Doug. Points to Doug this round.
Yeah, awesome.
That's a danger to society.
Doug is not responsible for your actions.
It is very, very good.
So keep those coming in, people. Any drink you tag, hashtag show us your cocktail, is going to get seen by Anders, and he's going to pick the best ones for the ongoing shows.
Make sure you include the full word cocktail. I mean, some of us won't mind if you abbreviate that, but for the good of the order.
Yeah, if you want to be seen for your full cocktail, if you want to be seen for something else, but otherwise, hashtag show us your cocktail. And maybe you'll be on the show as well. So I think that we've fully discovered the Pendennis cocktail here. I still think of it as a strange beast. I feel like it's pretending.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't belong where it is. And like somehow there's as much of a pretense in its manufacture or its design as the Pendennis Club itself.
It seems like somebody who has... You know what the Pendennis, I've just figured it out. The Pendennis is like the drink equivalent of the four young boys who are just all in one trench coat trying to get into a bar to get a drink and wearing far too many items of clothing to actually be believable. But the bartender's like, eh, I don't care. It's my last day. Sure, kid, what do you want?
I think with that, we can wrap this up. Keep listening to the show. Thank you for listening, because I love seeing all of the analytics on the podcast and the downloads, all of them coming in. It's heartening. It makes me happy to see that you enjoy what we're doing. So keep on listening. Subscribe.
And
maybe you can show us your cocktail as well. Until next time, keep on thinking and drinking. Bye now.
So many fried potatoes in my life.
What do you think of that? Have you had the sandwich before?
Yeah, what was the sandwich?
I have not had the sandwich before.
What did you think of it?
It's a bacon sandwich. Okay. Other members of our cast have had it before, and it's come highly recommended.
I have looked at it, but I've never had it.
I'm happy to report that it is the best bacon sandwich I've ever had.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really good.
And one of the best sandwiches I've ever had in a food establishment.
Thank you for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I would like to thank Jason Cruz and Nick Lehman for unraveling the history in the front part of the show, the regular tasting team Kevin Ortajczyk, Rachel Rubin, Nicole Pizzini, and Eric Martin for joining me in the grueling task of sampling each cocktail we discuss, and a special thanks to the skilled bartenders at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois for taming the cocktail monsters we enjoy. I would also like to thank Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and give us an awesome rating and tell us what you think while you're at it. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, come blacken your liver with us.